Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends, plus breaking business news every day. This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong.
Good morning. Happy Monday. Welcome to the Financial Exchange. Mike Armstrong, Tucker Silva, and Chuck is around here somewhere. He's going to be dropping in at some point. I don't know. He's a very important person with a lot of interviews to do.
Look at him.
He'll be joining us at some point as well, but a jam-packed show with a lot of news that broke Friday afternoon, as well as over the weekend that we need to cover. Infrastructure bill being passed, now eyes turning towards the what are we calling the $2 trillion Democrat bill now? The reconciliation social bill? I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
That. I don't think it really needs a name because I don't think it's going anywhere. We've got Jerome Powell's term coming up in February, a reappointment potentially happening. Interviews took place earlier last week. And then continue to talk about inflation and the labor market, which I know all eyes have been on. Really for the, you know, since the second half of this year, but most of this year entirely with quits rates through the roof and inflation really, really having people talking and impacting approval ratings. But we're going to turn first to a subject that, I mean, Tucker, you'd have to pull the tape for me, but when was the last time we actually spent an entire segment talking about U.S.-China relations and trade talks and things like those lines?
Recently, not an entire segment.
It's been a long time since we've had to talk about. I mean, there's been plenty of stories about China. I mean, you know, as frustrating as the economy is here with, you know, labor in short supply and inflation at the highest rate we've seen in 30 years, compared to the problems they're experiencing in China, I will take these ones any day of the week. So we honestly haven't been talking about Biden and Xi haven't had any conversations because there's been too many domestic problems, and it really hasn't been front and center here domestically. But this evening, they're going to be having a chat via what, Tucker? Like, are they having like a fax conversation? What are they using the White House?
They're sending faxes back and forth. I don't know. I would assume they just use Zoom, or I don't know if there's a White House version of Zoom.
I would hope that there is a White House national security version of Zoom. You know, you don't want somebody Zoom bombing conversation between two world leaders.
And they're just using like the free version of Zoom.
Sorry, our 30 minutes is up.
We only need 45 minutes. That's all we need. Why spend the money?
So, frankly, there's a lot that obviously is going to be discussed here, and I'm sure the stuff that gets put in the papers will be all about trade and how much the Chinese are going to buy in terms of agriculture, and you know, what the U.S. and the Chinese are going to commit to on climate pledges. But frankly, the only real thing that matters in this conversation has nothing actually to do with trade or supply chains. I think it all has to do with Taiwan and what happens there. And you could argue that that has to do with supply chains. But I think the overarching concern by most American scholars at this point, and anybody that has a good eye on China and what's going on there, is will they start using this moment of a lot of turmoil and angst among the Chinese general public as an opportunity to do something different in Taiwan? And there have been a few different comments coming out of state voices in China, the Chinese Communist Party, indicating that that might be the way that things go. I don't think it happens in the extreme short term, but again, the concern would be, hey, does China and the Communist Party take the playbook out of what they did in Hong Kong, which was, it wasn't an invasion per se, but it was a several different steps along the way of the Communist Party exerting control over what happens in Hong Kong, which is very different from the way it was 10, 15 years ago. I mean, I think most, you know, a lot of people probably know somebody who maybe worked in the banking sector or, you know, Americans that lived and worked in Hong Kong. And at this point, it has changed so much that that doesn't really happen to the same degree anymore. But the big difference is, okay, so in Hong Kong, right, it's now pretty much under Communist Party control. And that has meant that the financial hub that was located there has diminished to a large degree. A lot of companies have moved out. It is just not as big a financial hub there as it used to be, especially for Western workers. But moving a financial hub to Singapore or to Japan, relatively easy, not hugely complex. You relocate some servers and, you know, you lease out some new office space in somewhere in Singapore, and boom, you've relocated your banking sector. In the case of Taiwan, it is a completely different situation. You have Taiwan Semiconductors that is located there. And in 2020, Taiwan Semiconductors produced one half of the world's semiconductor supply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
50% of the world's semiconductor supply came from one company in Taiwan. They are not the only semiconductor manufacturer located in Taiwan. So if you look at total semiconductor supply, I believe that 70 to 80% of it comes out of Taiwan. Unlike financial hubs, you cannot merely pick up the expertise that you have. If you're Taiwan Semiconductor Company and you say, okay, the Communist Party is going to exert control over our country, let's go relocate to Silicon Valley. It doesn't happen that way. I think Intel's plans to develop domestic semiconductor manufacturing are on a 3 to 10 year timescale, and that's probably pretty aggressive and going to require a lot of government funding to even get close. And so, again, if we're talking about the large overall impact of a significant change in how business is done in Taiwan, that is going to be far more impactful to the United States economy and the United States interests than anything that happened in Hong Kong. Not to mention, you know, we've got a history of defense agreements with Taiwan that didn't exist with Hong Kong as well. And so, to me, you know, you can throw inflation out the window. I know that we have all sorts of domestic concerns about the labor market and shortages of goods and, you know, can we build homes fast enough? To me, all of those are shorter term issues that get resolved because capitalism will just fix them in the next couple of years. When it comes to U.S. and China relations, I think that this is the compelling story over the next 5 years. And nothing else really matters quite as much. So that's going to be the big story that I think is going to be talked about between Biden and Xi. I don't think anything's going to be resolved. I don't think we're going to have any more clarity on it. But if I'm looking at these conversations, that's what matters to me. We're going to take a quick break. We'll pick this up again on the next segment. But stay tuned right here on the Financial Exchange.
Wall Street Watch, a full update on the market's performance to date. Weekdays at 10:30, only here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Fall is fantastic on Nantucket. The crowds are smaller, the weather is mild, and Southern Airways Express can get you there from Norwood, Providence, and New Bedford. Southern Airways flies from convenient, smaller, less congested airports, making it easy for you to pick the day and time you want to travel. So take off for a day trip, an overnight, or a long weekend, and enjoy fall on Nantucket. Fly from convenient locations in Norwood, Providence, and New Bedford, and avoid Logan's long lines and high costs. Southern Airways Express. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
The new year is just around the corner, but you still have time to put together a strategy to save more money in the coming year, prepare for retirement, and safeguard your assets. Call the Armstrong Advisory Group at 800-393-4001 and ask for their new free guide, The Top 10 Year-End Tips. That's 800-393-4001, or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Have a question for Barry and Chuck? Now you can text us at 63566 and take part in the show at any time. Start your text with keyword Barry and join our exclusive club. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
So, as we head into mid-November now...
Do you have to check yourself there?
Well, I did. I mean, look, it's almost
Thanksgiving. Where are we, August?
It feels like February. I don't know why. It's just the darkness.
Yeah, the darkness.
It came early this year.
The darkness gets to you.
It came early this year. But, so what we have going on right now is we have the infrastructure bill signed, sealed, delivered as of this afternoon. I believe Biden's going to be signing that this afternoon. Mm-hmm. All attention now returns to Congress because they have a couple different things on their plate heading into December. They have this $2 trillion spending bill that has a bunch of different social programs included in it. Universal pre-K, you've got some money for an expanding and continuing the child tax credit a little bit.
Paid family leave is in and out and in and out. We don't really know.
We don't know.
Apparently this iteration is going to be in, but who knows?
The only thing that's really consistently in is that universal pre-K. Everything else seems to be in or out depending on the day of the week.
Medicare changes, but again, in and out. There's been talk about lowering the Medicare eligibility age, but I think at this stage, likely out.
So expect to hear an awful lot about this over the next few weeks. Okay. We don't know anything new compared to where things stood a week and a half ago, so I'm not going to try to pretend that we have some unique insight because no one knows anything. It's like that episode of The Sopranos. And the other piece that is, again, getting more urgent, but ultimately, as I believe happens every time, it ultimately ends up getting sorted out, is we have a debt ceiling that we have to deal with once more.
Woohoo!
December 3rd is the unofficial deadline from the U.S. Treasury based on the projections that we've seen. So again, about 3 weeks to go until that debt ceiling deadline.
So we'll hit December 3rd. Treasury will enact emergency measures.
Emergency measures are already underway.
Okay, so we're actually going to be looking this, at
December 3rd is the hard deadline.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is the hard deadline that we have here. In theory, if you want to see an easy pass, Democrats would have to begin the reconciliation process for a standalone debt ceiling bill pretty much in the next week or so.
I was going to say 3 weeks ago.
In the next week or so, you'll need about 10 days to actually get that through reconciliation. Republicans have indicated that they will not give any support to a further hike on the debt ceiling. They said that the last time, and then you had enough Republicans give support to be able to pass it via conventional measures. So we'll see what ends up happening when we get down to it. I know that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, she's had so many different roles along the years.
Two different jobs.
She has indicated a willingness and a desire to see Congress use reconciliation to avoid any potential issues, but Democrat leaders in the House and Senate have not yet indicated whether or not they actually want to pursue raising the debt ceiling via reconciliation. That's where we stand. Again, nobody knows anything.
Yeah, that's about where it stands. I had personally said, I don't know if you would agreed with me, Chuck, but I think like 3 weeks ago when we weren't hearing a lot about this bill, I was conjecturing that maybe it's actually close to getting passed. I certainly feel it's less likely that this happens than I did feel that way 3 weeks ago, but I still just have no clue, and I would prefer that we don't really talk about it until we have some sort of clue.
Another thing that we're waiting on, and this is now, we're getting into historic times when it comes to this. Jay Powell has his term set to expire in February, a four-year term. He was appointed in February of 2018 by then-President Donald Trump. Joe Biden has to name either Powell as a second-term Fed president, Fed chair, or he has to name a new Fed chair. He does not simply have the ability to do nothing and then say, well, he's just going to carry on. Powell would have to be reconfirmed just as anyone new would have to be confirmed. And what's interesting right now is that we are now at the latest point in this appointment cycle where we have no indication as to who the standing president is going to announce as their pick for Fed chair for a new term.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting circumstance. Biden's approval rating is struggling. According to 538, he's down at 42.7%. So, you know, around Donald Trump's average during his presidency is where that's looking. Your biggest concern and biggest complaint among people right now, why they don't approve of you, is because of inflation.
Yep.
And you're talking about replacing the key person whose job it is to control inflation. Now, I guess you could look at that in one of two different ways. You could look at it and say, look, the Fed is in charge of inflation. It's gotten out of control. They've also been riddled with a bunch of controversies around trading among Fed presidents. And so, hey, it'll be the popular thing to do to replace him. I would think quite the opposite. I don't think you want to, you know, replace the pilot in the mid of a engine failure. But maybe I'm missing the ball on here and missing, you know, what key Biden supporters are actually looking for. I disagree with it, but I comprehend the argument that by appointing somebody else like Lil Brainard, he would appease a lot of the further left Democrats that might not get what they want out of the reconciliation bill. So I don't know what's going to happen here.
No, I think it's at this point, I think Powell has a slight edge, but that edge has wavered the longer this has dragged on. Yep. So whereas back in September, I said Powell was probably a 70 to 80% chance of being the pick. Maybe he's closer to a 55, you know, 55-45 split as to whether or not he's the pick or whether it's Brainard. So it's
and I think anybody that's educated on the subject would not hold any of the policy decisions against Powell. I think he's done pretty much everything correct during all of this since the beginning of the pandemic. Where I think he does have things to answer for is the lack of controls around Fed presidents and the trading that they did in their portfolios. That was a pretty big problem.
Yeah, and let's be clear on one thing, at least as far as how my opinion goes on this. The Federal Reserve, in my opinion, does not possess the tools to accurately be able to shift the level of inflation.
Not in the short term. And maybe not even in the long term.
Not in the long term. And here's why. And people say, well, their mandate is to control prices. Yeah, it is. I don't think they have the tools to be able to do that. And here's why. For the period from 2010... through 2019, the major criticism of the Federal Reserve's policies were that they instituted this period of lower for longer and quantitative easing and yada yada, and we didn't see any meaningful inflation. In fact, we were below target on the Fed's inflation targeting for most of the last 10 years. It rarely got even to that 2% target.
Yep.
It was spending most of the time below that. So we can't look at the tools that the Fed uses and say, well, they were bad at generating inflation back then, but man, look at the inflation they're generating now. We can't blame them for both of those things when they're instituting quite literally the exact same policies.
Right.
They have not changed policy at all. In my opinion, actually, no, not in my opinion. What has changed factually is the fiscal policy of the United States in terms of the response to the financial crisis. Was a $700 billion infrastructure bill. The response to the COVID crisis was $7 trillion directly given to businesses, communities, states,
individuals
and households.
Yep.
So in my opinion, looking at the Fed and blaming them for inflation, well, no, the recovery in 2009 through 2014 was anemic because we didn't do anything
on the
fiscal side.
Yep.
The recovery now is too hot in the short term. Because we've admittedly overdone it a little bit on the fiscal side. The Fed's policies right now are basically identical to what they did after the financial crisis. So I remain of the opinion that the Fed doesn't really do what most people think it does. It's just kind of, it can move things on the margins in certain parts of the economy. But when you're dealing with big economic swings, it doesn't really have the toolbox to be able to change things. Congress possesses that with how they handle fiscal policy.
Yeah, I guess I would say certainly in terms of raising inflation, I think the Fed has no power whatsoever. You know, we saw that since the Great Recession. They did nothing. I think in terms of controlling prices and bringing them back down, they might have the ability to do so, but it might be like using a nuclear warhead to swat a fly.
Yeah,
so like
it's probably a side effect.
You have the tool to control inflation.
But you crash the economy in doing so.
But you crash the economy in doing so. So they don't want to use it unless absolutely necessary, I guess, is where I land with the Fed. Is, you know, yeah, raising prices, no. They got nothing in their toolbox that's going to do the job. Controlling them, yeah, they can do it, but we're really not going to like the outcome. So find another way to control it if you can.
As American workers leave jobs in record numbers, a closer look at who is quitting. Is it you?
Yeah, you didn't know today's my last show. No, I am
by
I
Michael
am.
Armstrong, Wall Street Journal. No, it's not.
It's not me. No, I am not the one quitting. I guess if there is to be, well, there's a lot of different ways you can look at it. If you want to look at by the sector, the people who are quitting, in the highest numbers tend to be in the food services and entertainment industry.
6.6% of people in leisure and hospitality quit their jobs in September. In 1 month, 6.6% of people working in that sector.
If we want to look at it age-wise, it'd be the older folks. People who are over the age of 55 are working to a lot smaller degree than they were prior to the pandemic. As of the last reading, the labor force participation rate for folks that were over the age of 55 was 38.4. In the last reading prior to the pandemic, that was 40.3.
37% of food, retail, and hospitality staffers are thinking about quitting, according to a survey from Mercer. Nearly half of low-wage workers surveyed said that their pay and benefits were insufficient. 41% of low-wage workers said they felt burned out from demanding workloads. Again, companies are hiring at almost record rates as well.
And they're willing to train the heck out of you right now.
The issue that they have is it's like trying to fill a bucket with a big hole at the bottom of it. Yeah. You're getting water in, but there's water heading out the other side just as quickly. And again, it's all about wages, in my opinion. Wages, benefits, and to a certain extent, workload. You know, if you're a meat processor saying, hey, you got to come in and do 14-hour shifts standing here, fine, you're going to have to pay someone more to do that because it's a really ugly job. Quick break. We've got Wall Street Watch next.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at TFE Show. Breaking business news is always first right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Time now for Wall Street Watch. A complete look at what's moving markets so far today right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
It is time now for Wall Street Watch. We're joined by Scott Wilson from the Armstrong Advisory Group for a look around at markets. And we were all positive to start the morning. There he is. Start the morning. But it looks like the NASDAQ at least has dipped into negative territory as we're an hour into trading now.
Yeah, that's correct. The good vibes were rolling over from Friday, but tapered off a little bit here. So we have the Dow Jones up about 0.25% this morning. The S&P 500 is up 0.12%, and we have the NASDAQ and Russell 2000 down. We have the NASDAQ down 0.07% with the Russell 2000 down 0.11%.
Talk to me about Dollar Tree. Stores we're all pretty familiar with. Stock is up 14% this morning. What did we hear from them?
Yeah, so they released news, or news came out, that activist investor Mantle Ridge took a stake in the discount retailer. Mantle wants Dollar Tree to take action to boost its share price, and is focusing primarily on their Family Dollar chain. The news prompted Deutsche Bank to upgrade the stock to buy from hold, citing the potential improvements. As we all know, when investors kind of come in and start talking to management, probing or asking them to make changes. So hopefully the stock can be more profitable. And that's what Mantle Ridge does. So they acquired, starting in around September 15th, about $1.8 billion in Dollar Tree stock, which coincides with Dollar Tree's decision to increase prices above that $1 threshold that they've been known for at their Family Dollar chains. So that abrupt change, and this was an abrupt change in their strategy from what management had been roughly during a mid-quarter there. So Dollar Tree had acquired Family Dollar back in 2015. Really, the stock has underperformed the market since then. So Mantle Ridge hoping to come in and have management make some changes so that way the stock price could potentially increase.
Yeah, I mean, compared to their, just looking at the two charts there between Dollar General and Dollar Tree, very, very different over the last 5 years. Just a pure upward trajectory for Dollar General that Dollar Tree has not experienced. Scott Wilson from the Armstrong Advisory Group taking a look today in particular at Dollar Tree, ticker symbol there, DLTR. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Mike.
Talk a little bit about Royal Dutch Shell, or
no more.
Actually, they're dropping the Royal Dutch, and now they're just going to be known as Turtle.
So now they're
going to be known as Shell.
So are they now no longer a shell company, or are they... They had a shell company, and now they're getting rid of the shell company, which makes them no longer Royal Dutch Shell, just Shell.
Do they still produce oil? I'm just so confused by
so
this.
So they're no
what the hell is going on with this name?
They do, but they don't want to do as much anymore.
Okay. Is there any indication that they'll be joining the metaverse?
I mean,
virtual oil.
Might as well not. Yeah. Might as well jump on.
How do I buy virtual oil? Can you get me some digital oil?
What are
please?
The futures and? Metaverse oil.
Yes, can you get me some, I believe we'll call it Moil, Metaverse oil.
So a...
Moil futures are down this morning.
British-based company named after their tax shell company held in Amsterdam is dropping the shell company in the Netherlands and is now just going to be referred to as Shell.
Yes, they're moving their headquarters back to the UK.
Uh-huh.
I think largely to get away
from... Which it
from,
already is. Well, I guess the tax headquarters is in...
Correct.
But there's nobody there.
So they're moving their tax headquarters into the metaverse in the UK. And
so what do we call them? So we just keep calling them Shell.
They're going to be called
did
Shell
from now.
Did
anybody call
on.
Them Royal Dutch Shell unless you like owned
I did.
The
I did.
Stock?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a proper name. You know, it's kind of like James Wilkes Booth. You don't just say it Booth. Is. You have to say the James Wilkes.
It is very fancy. I'm going to miss it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Their reasoning behind it was kind of funny. It was just like, you know, we don't really do anything in the Netherlands. We don't really feel entitled to the name Royal Dutch anymore.
No, you know why they're doing it?
Why?
It's because of the court in the Netherlands that's forcing them to speed up their climate guidelines.
Mm.
They're trying to get away from that. That's 100% why they're doing this, in my opinion. Mm. Is they're going to try to move jurisdictions and then claim, hey, we're no longer under this court's jurisdiction.
Right, no, not EU.
Not EU anymore, so they're going to say, "Look, this isn't. We're not. You know, we're not beholden to this decision, and so you guys have fun." That's my guess as to why they're actually doing this, not because they want to sell oil or something like that.
Makes a hell of a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're an oil company and you have a court that is trying to prevent you from being an oil company, I'm not saying this is good or bad, but I am saying you're going to try to get away from that court.
Yeah, I would think so.
Folks, want to talk to you about the latest guide from the Armstrong Advisory Group. It is a good one to have with only 46 days left in the year. It's titled The Top 10 Year-End Financial Planning Tips. And again, financial planning is something where the way I look at it, folks, over the course of your lifetime, you're going to work 80,000 hours.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
80,000 hours. If you don't take 1 or 2 hours at the end of the year to make sure that your money that you've earned over those hours is doing what it should be, then you're not doing yourself justice financially. You're not doing everything that you can to put yourself in a financially successful position. So this guide, again, it's your top 10 year-end tips. I'm not asking you to spend years doing this. I'm asking you to spend 1 or 2 hours looking over these tips to see if there's a way that you can optimize the work that you've already been doing for 80,000 hours of your life. How do you get this guide? You don't have to take much time. It's quick. You don't have to spend an hour to get it. You got to spend about 2 seconds. First, call 800-393-4001. Call that number and request it. Option two, go to armstrongadvisory.com. There's a button there that says monthly guide. Click on it. When you click on that guide, you can download the guide. Again, this does not take hours to do. This is simple, easy, efficient stuff for you to help improve your financial picture. The guide, again, is the top 10 year-end tips. Two ways to get it. Call 800-393-4001. 4001 or go to armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Charles Zada representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
The headline in the Wall Street Journal, activist investor Mantle Ridge has a $1.8 billion stake in Dollar Tree.
Yeah, we just talked about that.
Scott mentioned that.
I don't know.
That's why the stock's up 14% today.
I wasn't on the segment. Whatever. Not my problem. Let's talk a little bit about gold then.
What's up? So gold, gold is testing new, like, what, 4 or 5 month highs on presumably inflation pressures, but maybe something else, because
I think it's entirely inflation pressures.
Gold has not been all that well tied to inflation. You're still well below highs of August 2020 when it reached, you know, $2,089 per ounce.
The big thing is you're seeing a further deepening of what we call negative real rates. And for those of you listening, to talk to you about what negative real rates are, take the 10-year Treasury, which right now is running at 1.55%. Mm. If inflation is running over the course of that 10-year period, okay, if inflation runs over the course of that 10-year period at 5%, the real rate of return on that Treasury is not 1.55%, but negative 3.45%, actually, okay? Because in real purchasing power, you are losing money if you're sitting on that while inflation is running at 5%. So what we typically see with gold, it tends to correlate not with inflation prints, but with real rates. And as you see real rates move further negative, gold tends to get bid up. And so that's what we've seen over the last month or so, as we have seen real rates going further negative as inflation has increased while the 10-year hasn't moved a whole lot. And so you've got gold getting a little bit of a bid right now. The key, though, okay, is, okay, to any trade is, okay, how do you know, like, when to actually go and do this and get in and get out? And the thing that makes gold really tough is that, unlike stocks, which most of the data shows you should just buy and hold for the long term, gold is something where, in order to actually make money on it beyond just the rate of inflation, you've got to be able to know when to buy and sell. And that's not something that Mike, me, or Tucker has any expertise in.
Yeah, at least historically. Buying and holding gold
doesn't do well for you.
Yeah. You go look at...
You make a real return of 2 to 3% a year.
I mean, since we unpegged it from the dollar, right? You go look at that over that time period and just, yeah, has not been a good... I guess it's stored its value, but it hasn't appreciated
a lot. No, it's... what I've always heard, and I always like this one, an ounce of gold is what it should cost to get a great custom-tailored suit. So back in the 1970s, when gold went to $400 an ounce, you could get a great suit for $400. Today, you can get a great suit for $2,000. I'm not talking, you can get a perfectly fine one at Joseph A. Bank for a couple hundred.
Yeah.
But, you know, one that's custom fit for you. The price of gold is going to basically be the cost of a good suit at any point in time.
I'm just going to go off on a tangent here.
Yeah.
I cannot think about Joseph A. Bank anymore without thinking about the Saturday Night Live commercial about using them as paper towels.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to imagine that just has completely destroyed the Joseph Frank band.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Tucker? No.
You basically, I mean, they're just teasing about how cheap the suits are and how they just kind of fall apart. And so it's basically suits on a roll, and they just like pull them and tear them off and use them to clean up messes just like you would a paper towel.
You buy one, get 12 free.
And yeah, it was... for me, it's just completely ruined the image of Jose Bank, which I didn't have a great reputation beforehand, but yeah, that SNL commercial just really stuck with me.
It's, again...
Which is why I was laughing when Chuck was talking about Jose Bank. It's nothing personal. I wore a Jose Bank suit on Friday, actually.
Exactly. They're fine. Like, you know what you're getting in everything. Yep. So it's, no one actually needs a $2,000 suit. I'm just saying, if you want like a custom tailored one, that's what it's going to cost you.
Would be nice.
About an ounce of gold.
About an ounce. Yeah, bring 1 ounce of gold to a tailor and see what you get.
Here you are, sir.
Drop it on the counter.
Oh, gee, it's yes. You brought 1 ounce of gold. Here's one suit for you. I know your measurements already.
Fair trade.
I consider that fair, and I will put it in my vault. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how manufacturers are continuing to try to adapt to the ongoing chip shortage.
Breaking business and financial news first throughout the day. Only here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. One of the toughest conversations you can have with your family is about legacy planning.
The plan for your future is incredibly important, but if not done properly, can cause numerous problems. Instinctively, you probably want to leave your assets to your children, but that may not always be the best course of action, especially if the kids have financial difficulties or are in the midst of a divorce. The best way to make sure they're taken care of and avoiding major tax consequences is by calling Cushing & Dolan, the experts in elder law and estate planning. They've got a brand new guide out for November called The Do's and Don'ts of Gifting Assets. Call 866-848-5699 and get this free guide today. In it, you'll learn about information related to the gifting process, what tax issues may arise from a significant gift like a home or a vacation property, and what happens to the asset if a child has creditor issues. Call 866-848-5699. That's 866-848-5699. Or download the guide right now from their website, LegalExchangeShow.com. That's LegalExchangeShow.com.
This is your home for the most comprehensive coverage of the economy and the trends on Wall Street. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Southern Airways Express. Enjoy a day trip or a long weekend on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. Southern's fast flights from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford make for the perfect New England fall getaway. Southern Airways Express, great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Can I do a quick just segment on cities, states, and regions that have new in their title?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got no control over your microphone, so unless Tucker...
I'll allow it. Let's see how this goes.
How come someone can say they're from Jersey, but no one ever says they're from England?
Or York.
Or York. Just questions.
Because Jersey sounds cool, man.
Does it?
Yeah, I'm from Jersey. Jersey Rock City.
It's just something I've wondered about. You hear people say, oh, yeah, I'm from Jersey. Well, how come we can't drop the new from England?
Yeah.
Just wondering. Just wondering. Let's talk a little bit.
Fair.
Let's talk about chip shortages. Okay. We've been talking about this chip shortage that's been ongoing worldwide for really the last 8 to 9 months now. I think it first started to gain any kind of traction in our minds sometime late winter, early spring, somewhere in that ballpark. And so what you're seeing right now is that as companies over the last several years have been, you know, adding screens onto everything and Wi-Fi this and Wi-Fi that and smart this and smart that, companies are now saying, no, we need to dumb it down and go analog because we can't get chips to build the stuff that we're trying to with all these screens and connectivity.
How exciting is this? I can finally buy a refrigerator without a TV in it now?
Right.
I can get a washing machine that doesn't connect to my wireless network? Like, all of these sound like fantastic things. I mean, really, it did make sense for these manufacturers. I'm not talking about the Wi-Fi connected washing machines or even the TVs inside fridges. Those didn't make any sense ever. But for a lot of companies that were, you know, putting together, there's an example here with Toro. They had these joysticks that were just all semiconductor controlled. They weren't physical joysticks anymore. They were just they were just basically sensors to determine the vehicle which way to turn. They can't get the semis anymore, so they said, well, why don't we just put back in mechanical joysticks? It's more expensive. It's a more complicated manufacturing process for them.
But they work.
But they work, and you don't need semiconductors. So I think we're going to start seeing this in certain areas, and I do think that it means, fewer refrigerators with flat screens in them and fewer dishwashers with, I don't know, what fancy, probably Wi-Fi connected dishwashers at this point too, right?
Why do you need Wi-Fi connect? Oh, yeah, there are. There are smart dishwashers.
So I don't understand the flat screen thing on a fridge.
I don't either, Tucker. It's insane. Especially in a world where every person out there has sold a million different screens. You've got a household that's got 4 different phones, 6 different tablets. Their head is inside of, a pizza box.
So in the commercial, it was so that you could see what's in there.
Open the door.
Right.
Freaking door.
No, this is innovative, Tucker.
While you're at the store?
I'm in the grocery store.
Okay, that makes
sense.
Pull
up an app on my phone. Boom, what's in my refrigerator? Again, if I just do like 3 minutes of planning here, then I don't need a $700 screen in my refrigerator.
Or worst case, if you buy an extra jar of mayo, you stick it in the pantry for a little bit. It's like it's not going to go bad. Okay. Oh, we had grapes and I bought extra grapes. Eat them.
Son of a.
Have a grape-a-palooza. Figure it out.
It does drive me insane when we buy duplicates of something, though. Just like, wasted money.
So Tucker,
but what do you buy that goes bad? The only thing that really goes bad if you have a duplicate is either milk, fruit, or veggies.
Mm. We've bought dupe yogurts before, and I'm just like, oh, it's one too many yogurts. It's going to go. Now I got to eat so much yogurt.
But yogurt lasts forever.
Does it?
Yogurt lasts a long time.
All right. Yeah. Maybe that's a bad example then.
Yeah.
You know, it's. And again, if you buy too much fruit, okay, have a little bit more fruit. It's not going to add to your waistline.
But then the fruit goes bad faster.
Which is why you have to eat it faster.
So in either case, the conclusion that manufacturers are coming to is that they need to start building stuff with fewer chips. And they're starting to do so in certain areas. I guess the question is, the one area where everybody seems to really care about this stuff seems to be their cars. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misreading this, because actually, if there's one thing that I've heard about that pisses car owners off, is that they have those like beeping sensors that go off every time they
like 30% of car owners disable them.
Yeah. So maybe that's the fact, is just get fewer of these things in cars, at least in the short term.
Tucker, what are you giggling about over there?
No, I'm just reading some of the features on the smart dishwasher.
Oh, what do I get?
You can use the ThinQ app to check on the status of your dishwasher.
It's either done or not done. Who cares?
From your smartphone.
Is that easier than just putting my ear up next to it and seeing if it's still running? Because I can do that.
So
I do that today.
If you're in the other room and you want to know the status of your dishes, and you just log on to your phone, you see, and it says, hey, your dishes are done. So you don't have to get off the couch to open the dishwasher.
Yeah, until you're going to start loading it and unloading it for me via some smart robot, I'm not interested in any new technology in my dishwasher.
Good God.
None. None whatsoever. I don't need it. It's unnecessary.
And even beyond that, the idea of, I've seen, you know, smart ovens that have been fancied. Oh, you can, you know, Wi-Fi into your oven and then you can tell it to turn on. Why do I need to do that? Tucker, here's the thing. Most even pre-smart ovens had delay timers so that you could set a delay and tell it to turn on at a certain time if you're not home. Mm. But here's the other thing. You shouldn't be turning the oven on if you're not home anyways, because you could burn down the house.
You're going to burn your house down, you morons.
Like, you could turn it on when you're not there. That's a good idea. Let's turn on the oven when we're not home.
What could go wrong?
Like, and finally here.
I left a pizza in the oven.
Like,
oh, have you ever had anyone do that overnight when they fell asleep in college?
Yeah.
It's not good.
It's not good.
And all of the problems that we have with data security and every other thing, do you really want every single item in your house connected to the internet? I don't think you do. I really don't think you do. So, yeah, let's get fewer of those.
So there's that. We're going to take a quick break here on the Financial Exchange. And when we come back, we're going to ruin the rest of technology in our second hour.